Hello, my name is Chip Lang, and you are listening to Total EM. This time we have Patrick Bufuma once again as part of the EMID podcast series interviewing Dr. John Perkins. This time to talk about antibiotic stewardship for the pediatric population. Again, apologies for the audio content, but let's get on to the podcast and we'll discuss more at the end.
Pediatric antibiotic stewardship. So this actually was impressive to me when you presented this at ASAP, and you seem pretty passionate about this over email. So what's the big deal and why does this matter?
This goes back to an article that came out, Lovegrove et al., U.S. Emergency Department visits for adverse drug events from antibiotics in children from 2011 to 2015, the Journal of Pediatric Infectious Diseases. Basically, what they looked at was 60 different emergency departments, and they looked at adverse drug event visits, and they boiled it down to which ones were caused by antibiotics. And the very first thing they found was for children, and they enrolled kids 19 and under, 50% of all adverse drug events were related to antibiotics. And then if you kept boiling that number down, it was 40% of those were in kids 2 years of age or younger. And of that particular population, almost 9 out of 10, it was an allergic reaction to an antibiotic that they had received. And not surprisingly, more than half of those were related to penicillin products, amoxicillin being at the top of the list in terms of offenders. So this particular paper is striking for a lot of reasons. By itself, it's a concerning number, but if you think about how we practice in pediatrics, it really sets us up for making this number a lot worse. You have an environment where you have expectations coming in. My child has, and the classic example is like, my child has an ear infection, and you diagnose otitis media. Right off the bat, you have parental expectations that there's going to be antibiotics prescribed, and you are in a tough position where you're going to have to either meet that expectation, knowing full well that this may be a viral etiology, or you're going to have to disappoint the parents and say, like, you know what, we are not going to give antibiotics for this. It's a virus. You can talk about a watch and wait strategy. There's a lot of different things to do. But I think what this paper reflects, is it's so easy to take that route of like, here's your prescription. What's the harm? Well, here it is. Here is a great evidence that we are really putting these kids at risk. I mean, that's a tremendous number, and these are our youngest, most vulnerable patients in pediatrics. So actually, if you're thinking about this in terms of harm, a 3% hospitalization rate, when you're talking about thousands and thousands of children under 2 presenting with adverse drug events related to antibiotics, and 1 out of 33 are hospitalized, that's significant harm, not only morbidity, but that's a tremendous cost to the healthcare system and potentially avoidable in that situation. So yes, I would focus on that. No, there's not a lot of deaths, but I would certainly agree that there's harm being done if you're talking about 1 in 33 being hospitalized.
Let's talk about sort of mitigation strategies then for utilizing antibiotic stewardship in pediatrics. You talked about a watch and wait strategy. What's your approach for that?
So if I could go back just a second and talk about another really interesting piece from this paper, and I think, it honestly, of all the take-home points, this is the one I would take home as a listener. So they also asked the parents in a separate piece, do you have any recollection of a discussion with the provider about harms of antibiotics? And 4 out of 5 parents had no recollection that this conversation had ever taken place. So what's happening is we are avoiding the tough conversation. We're not spending the extra 4 or 5 minutes in the room saying, like, there's multiple ways to approach otitis media, and here are our options. And let's go through this and talk about the risk benefit of both ways to do this. And one of that may be the watch and wait strategy. So when you talk about the watch and wait strategy, I think this is where it's incumbent upon each department to have policies in terms of, like, what are we doing, so you don't have providers all over the map in terms of how they're approaching this. This can be very problematic for a number of reasons. It's tough on providers, it's tough on parents when they're bringing their kids in and they see different providers practicing in different fashions. It's tough on the local pediatricians who are seeing these patients in the outpatient setting, and they have no idea which provider is doing what in the emergency department. These patients are being followed up. So the most important thing for the department to do is talk with the local pediatricians. What are we going to do? Who are the appropriate patients for a watch and wait strategy? And do we have buy-in from our local pediatricians? Because the watch and wait strategy only works if there's going to be timely follow-up in terms of give it 48 hours. If ibuprofen and acetaminophen don't start resolving symptoms, then fill a prescription. But that also relies on the follow-up piece.
Now, with the watch and wait strategy, are you still providing a prescription or are you saying follow up with the pediatrician in 48 hours?
My personal practice is to provide a prescription, also considering that if it's a Thursday, if it's Friday, Saturday, sometimes it can be very difficult to obtain 48-hour follow-up. It depends on where you practice. You may be able to send a inbox message to the pediatrician or contact the group. A lot of groups have Saturday hours. This is, again, a discussion to have with them. If you don't provide a prescription and your pediatrician say, like, you know what, we really like the watch and wait strategy, but we want to see them, we will make it happen. Well, then you have your answer there of like, well, this is fantastic. We're going to do watch and wait. You've met the criteria that our department has set forward. Pediatrician will see you in 48 hours and happy to take it from there.
I think you raised a really good point about practice variation. I think it's the frustrations are probably not just for pediatrics, but any practice variation, even, you know, pain meds or practice variation for imaging. I think we see that a lot. And that's probably something that's highly frustrating for sort of everyone involved, even nursing staff, I could imagine. You talk about that 4 out of 5 people don't recall having a discussion. Do you think that's a little bit inflated? Do you think it's just, why do you think that is? Do you think it's just we it's easier to write a prescription? What can we do to make that less than 4 out of 5?
I think it's inflated. I think a lot of parents probably may not recollect that conversation. I think a lot of providers may cover it within like a single sentence and not really have a robust discussion. So it goes right past the parents and they think they've had that discussion. I don't think we do a good job of that. It really should be a couple minutes. And there's tons of resources out there on the CDC. They have a section specifically geared towards antimicrobial stewardship. They have a ton of flyers for specifically designed for parents in terms of this is something you can hand to them that goes over what are antibiotics, what can they do as in terms of harm to your child. And just so they at least have the information on both sides as to like, well, yes, if we don't treat otitis media with antibiotics, it could get worse if it is bacterial in nature. But here is the downside if it's a virus and we keep giving antibiotics to your child. So I think just providing them with information is just this is very similar to what we do in adults these days where we have an informed discussion about risk regarding chest pain. So you have a patient comes in, you talk about the heart score, and you ideally sit down with the patient and talk to them about their comfort level about like, you know, we can always go further, but I need to have this discussion with you. I don't know why we don't do a better job of having that similar discussion in the pediatric emergency department, where honestly, I think a lot of parents would really appreciate that. They're coming in there, and the more information they get, the better they will envision the encounter has gone.
I'm going to back up for 1 second. We talked about practice variation, and I'm curious, and you talked about trying to get everyone on the same page. Has your department approached having a watch and wait strategy as a team? And have you approached the pediatric departments? And what, if any, resistance was that met with?
So we have quite a few algorithms. One of the ones we are currently working on is this particular one. It's a little bit more tricky to sort out only because we have a lot of varied outpatient practices and it's not within our hospital does not own all the outpatient pediatric practices and they're tough to kind of get together for like, what would you like? And so until we can get that done, it's tough for our providers to look up in terms of like, hey, you know, Dr. Smith wants this, Dr. Johnson wants that, you know, so forth. So that's a work in progress. we have had some progress in terms of what are our expectations for other pediatric infectious diseases in terms of like how are we approaching evaluation of urinalysis, deploying antibiotics, and PEDS fever 29 to 60 days to try to get everybody on the same page there. This actually, as simplistic as it seems, because you're now involving the pediatricians outside of your department, is actually more complex. So it takes a little bit longer, but we're hoping that the reward will be there.
All right. So we know that having the discussion matters. We know that word choices matter, but we don't necessarily always get the blueprint on what to say. So what I'd like to see if we can do is, what's your discussion? What are the word choices that you are using specifically with parents to when you approach the subject?
So if we're talking specifically otitis media, and that's honestly, that's the large majority of kids under two getting antibiotics that potentially could be unnecessary, is very important to use when you're talking about ear infections. You have to dig down and really start mentioning the words potentially viral, potentially bacterial, and dive down and say, like, if we are correct that this is bacterial, your child may receive benefit from antibiotics. If it's bacterial, then if it's viral, then certainly they're not going to receive benefit, and they will be getting a 10-day duration of antibiotics that they do not need and are going to get side effects from, diarrhea, et cetera, up to other adverse drug reactions. We talk about, they often think, the parents need to think downstream, what is the risk, right? That's what they're really, the question is, like, what happens if they have a bacterial otitis media and in 48 hours they have not received antibiotics? Are they going to get meningitis? Are they going to die? What's going to happen? That's the question you really have to address to them, saying, like, in 48 hours, here are the specific things you're looking for that I would want to see your child back for. They're not eating, they're throwing up, they're not acting right, that type of thing. But if it's just pain, there's no harm whatsoever in waiting 48 hours to see if we can avoid delivering unnecessary antibiotics. So I think it's really highlighting the discussion of viruses that is, you must mention, like, what is the harm? Because that's the big piece in their mind. The public thinks infections without antibiotics are going to get worse, and they're headed down towards the road towards death and other, consequences. So addressing those up front will solve a lot of the questions on the back end.
So I noticed in that discussion that you didn't say come back for a fever. I've always kind of wondered this. It's often given in discharge instructions, I know your ear hurts, come back if you get a fever, come back if you get this, or come back if you're not better in 48 hours. And so I've always kind of wondered, we're giving these patients, we're telling them to take Tylenol or acetaminophen or ibuprofen for analgesia with a watch and wait strategy. And I've had some parents that have turned to me and have said, well, okay, how am I supposed to see if my child has a fever if they're getting these medications around the clock? So, and I've kind of been stumped. So I'm not sure, are you just saying fever's okay, come back if they're not acting right? What's your take on that?
So my personal approach to this is to try to minimize the discussion of fever, because parents tend to focus so much on that. And then it will kind of take away from other parts of the discussion that I feel are more important.
Okay.
I agree, you have to mention it, because a lot of times that is going to be one of their concerns. I try to address it very briefly, saying that we are not concerned about the number or the fever in general. We are concerned if the fever is causing your child not to eat or drink. That's our concern. So, you need to give the child ibuprofen or acetaminophen so that they will feel comfortable enough to hydrate, and that won't become an issue. But I actually encouraged them. I said, like, I don't really care if it's 101 or 103 today or tomorrow. So why don't you just not even worry about it? Please don't check their temperature, because I don't want that information. What I prefer you do is just follow up in 48 hours and, like, here are the pieces that I would want to know. And that actually, I think, relieves a lot of anxiety for parents. Because if you don't say anything, they will be at home checking it five or six times. And that's what they're concerned about. and you didn't particularly tell them, like, if you tell, they will follow directions for their child. If you tell them that here are the things that I would like you to do, they will do that.
You want to tell me more about the antibiotic stewardship and give me the silver bullet on this one?
So I think the paper that we've discussed is really eye-opening in the sense of it's a huge number of pediatric adverse drug events. And the population most vulnerable is the one we are most trying to protect, those under two. And trying to sort out in the emergency department viral from bacterial otitis media is really difficult. And so we have, in general, as a specialty, taken the easy way out and used antibiotics. And now we are seeing the consequences of this. And so our practice needs to change such that we spend, I mean, these used to be like the easiest encounters in the world. This is 2 minutes, your kid's fussy, has a fever, tugging at the ear, here's a prescription out the door, literally like 3 or 4 minutes. Not the case anymore. Your job now is to go in and have this discussion about the risks and benefits, educate the parents about this and make sure they're comfortable with, like, you know, there's going to be a need for follow-up. Here are the parameters. In an ideal world, here's what our department has discussed in terms of like who's appropriate for watch and wait strategy. And I want to make sure that you're comfortable with this and know exactly why we're doing it. So I think it's changing it. These are no longer simplistic encounters, and you're doing better service to your patient and the parents by spending more time in the room and educating them.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate you talking to me this morning.
All right. Thanks, John Perkins, and thanks, Patrick Bufuma, for coming on to the podcast. And it is always a pleasure to learn about infectious disease. If you want to learn more, check out the Total EM at totalem.org. Also, since we haven't mentioned it in a little bit, I wanted to mention the Practical Pocus side of things. That is our sponsor. Check out practicalpocus.com, and there is an upcoming ultrasound course called Critical Access 2019. Registration is still open at this time, but you need to make sure to register soon because things are going to start closing up here in the near future. But until next time, continue to provide total care everywhere.